You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Follow Up Boss, one of the leading CRMs, client relationship managers, for residential real estate. Tons of top producing agents and some of the fastest growing teams out there are using Follow Up Boss to increase lead conversion, eliminate busy work that you're not doing anyway, and frankly, deliver a higher class experience in real estate to everybody who chooses you as their realtor of choice. So if you're going to keep listening to this, which I know you will, there's more information and a personal review of Follow Up Boss. For more information, go to followupboss.com/crazy. Hello, friends. I'm Lee Brown, and this is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And one of these days, I'm going to record all of my green room conversations because, frankly, they're better than the podcast, but this one's good anyway. I've got Chris Larson with us today to give some really interesting questions to ask as investors. And also, he's in Asheville, North Carolina. So you get to also overhear some conversations about good things in North Carolina. Tune in, enjoy the conversation, leave a comment, and check out the show notes. Most importantly, I'll see you on the other side. So, Chris, welcome to the show and tell our viewers a little bit about who you are and what you do. Now they know you're in Asheville and they're going to want to come stay in your Airbnbs probably and go to Biltmore as well, but give them a little bit of background.
Yeah, Lee. Well, thank you so much. It's great to be on. We had an awesome little conversation here before we officially got started.
Right, we had a conversation.
We did, but I love your patriotism. That's how it all started with the flag and the sweater. It looks a lot better than my ugly Christmas sweater with my beer-carrying sloth on it. But yeah, so we live in Asheville. We've been here 13 years. My wife and I chose to move from the DC area down here for a lot of different reasons, but it really ties into the 18 years I spent in the medical device industry and also why we got into multifamily real estate, and that was demographics. We wanted to move to an area that had kind of like a rising tide. And you know, because you're right down the road in North Carolina, people are moving here. And it's really easy to look at the statistics. I mean, anybody that has remotely paid attention knows that moving from places like New York City that has really high tax rates, they've kind of handled things in certain ways here over the past year or two with the pandemic. People want their freedom and they want a better quality of life and they want a lower cost of living. And that's a lot of the reason that brought us down here. But when it comes to real estate, I started when I was 21. I was in college. And by the way, I'll tell you, if you're listening today, I'll tell you how you can get a copy of my book here for free. And I go all into the kind of history of my story. But I bought my first property at 21. And part of the reason was that I was racing bicycles. That was my passion. I went to college to get an engineering degree, but I really went to college to race my bike. And that was,
hey, like Lance Armstrong kind of racing?
Yeah,
like,
I actually trained with Lance, as a matter of fact. So I did. He's way faster, but I at least got to keep up a little bit. Yeah, so I raced road bikes and that was my true passion. And long story short, I ended up quitting a year after my best friend, my training partner, and my roommate in college passed away. He had a brain hemorrhage and I raced for another year. And I realized kind of, you know, after using cycling and racing as really as therapy, I realized it was kind of silly to be riding my bike 15, 20, 30 hours a week when there was so much more that life had. And I made this pledge to myself that I didn't want to have any more regrets. And I'm winning races. I'm not happy. I'm thinking like, all right, there's got to be something better than this. So I go back to school. I didn't want to be an engineer. I gave up my passion that I've been doing my entire, you know, really adult life since I was 14. I was about 20 at that point. And I'm like, now what? You know, it was like total reset. But I knew one thing. I wanted to live life on my own terms. And I knew to do it, you had to have financial independence. And that's how I ultimately set out and settled on real estate to do that.
Well, that's where a lot of people land as a foundation is real estate because, I mean, Warren Buffett said to do it and everybody wants to be like Warren Buffett to an extent. So when you're 21 years old and you decide you want to buy real estate, how in the world do you make that happen? Because obviously in today's market, it's gotten increasingly expensive. And I'm always a little bit shocked, Chris, and I don't know about you, but how people have, they just don't seem to have the level of creativity they used to have where organically they could go think of ideas and go try new things. So obviously when you're 21, you don't have a lot of money. Creativity's got to be the place you lean into to make it happen. So how did you get there? What were you doing as far as talking to mentors or resources? And obviously we have your story as a resource, but when you were 21, you didn't obviously have your own book yet. So where'd you go?
No, I didn't, but I read a lot of books. I read 250 books in less than 5 years. So I was reading a book a week. The first book I read, one of the first books I read was a book on how to speed read. And speed reading, really, if you're listening, like, all right, this guy's crazy. It's really just a method to really focus and digest material. And it also helps you study better. So if you can basically, in a nutshell, if you can calm yourself down, take some deep breaths for 2 to 5 minutes and really turn everything off and immerse yourself, you could probably double your reading speed. So if you're listening and thinking, man, what can I do? Another thing you can do.
Throw this away. Don't read a book on that. This is talking about real books like on paper.
Yeah, absolutely. But what you can use your phone for, I love Audible, the Audible app. And if I'm like, I was just doing a workout, I was riding my bike and I'm listening to like audiobook or sometimes podcasts. And I listen to them at 1.5 speed and it takes a little bit to get used to. But again, those are two things you can do to digest this. So I'm reading all these books and Lee, that's the strategy I came up with was very simple. I said, if I can buy enough properties to have $10,000 coming in after expenses, before debt service, so before I'm paying off the mortgages, then I just have to pay those properties off. So that was kind of my overall strategy. And I'm like, I just have to go get a job to actually pay these mortgages off. But the question is like, how do you buy that first property? My first property was $90,000. It was a townhouse in Blacksburg, Virginia. I went to Virginia Tech and I put about $3,000 down. I had my mom co-sign. So why is real estate a great option? Leverage, anybody can get into it. And if you're not sure, you can find a partner, you can find a mentor. My mom co-signed on the loan. I managed it. I paid it all and I paid her off at a point in the future. You can always find somebody that you can partner with. If you have more experience or more time than money, then you can go and do something like that. And the other thing is, don't be afraid to invest outside of your hometown. So if you live in like New York City or San Francisco or even like Asheville, people are like, wow, it's so expensive here. You can go 10 minutes and find properties significantly less expensive.
But Waynesville, you also love Waynesville.
Yeah, Waynesville's great. I mean, there's all these little towns, right, that are around. But then the other thing is, like you said, Lee, you can be creative. I think one of the best things that you can do, we were just talking before the podcast here, we have 2 Airbnbs. I would start with Airbnbs if I could do it all over again. And we had a great episode with Kyle Stanley, who's become a friend of mine. It was episode 50, if you go to my podcast. And he actually teaches a technique, Lee, where you can get into Airbnbs without buying the property yourself. And it's a really cool technique. It's called Airbnb arbitrage or short-term rental arbitrage. So I've known several young investors or early investors that have gone out and used that technique. And they've said, hey, Chris, this has changed my life.
So let's unpack two things there. One of them is purchasing that townhouse in Blacksburg. And for any of y'all that are listening or watching, thinking, I don't have a mom that can co-sign for me. I just want to remind you that when you're in college or college kids are around, if you're not paying the college itself for room and board because you're in a dorm, then you're renting somewhere and it's probably with three buddies, which is how you think about this current phase of house hacking where you're renting out the other bedrooms.
It's exactly what I did. It's possible that
you find three buddies and one of them has a parent that can get the loan going and you're the manager because you're living there. And it's not about necessarily that you have connections, because I think that's one of the myths in real estate investing is that the only way you get started is to have some big money bags behind you, and you don't. You may just need a grown up somewhere who you present a business plan to. And that's what this boils down to. And as we all know, college towns tend to be, on the balance, a little more affordable when it comes to that student housing around campus, especially if it's not fancy, because not everybody needs granite countertops and floor-to-ceiling glass. You just need somewhere to live. And frankly, boys need nothing that fancy anyway. It's girls that want it fancier. Let's just call that what it is. But the second thing I wanted to unpack briefly is the Airbnb piece, because one reason people don't deal with it is because they can't figure out how to handle the logistics. How do I become a hotel? Because the Airbnb process is more hotel than a traditional rental because it's got to be furnished.
And
the guests kind of have an expectation now of toiletries being there and the lights being cut on and it having clean towels. So is there a good resource for somebody to figure out how to make it turnkey? Because I think if more people knew how to put the whole picture together, they might give it a shot.
Yeah. So again, if you go to episode 50, I'm just confirming something here on our website.
And I'll link to it in the show notes, friends. So you can go straight to that episode when we get the confirmed link.
Yeah. And you can actually go to nextlevelincome.com/Airbnb, the three letters. And it'll have the link in there to a 20% off coupon for Kyle's course. And I actually bought it myself before I had Kyle on the show, because again, we're operating two Airbnbs. I'm thinking like, you know what, let me see if this guy's for real. And, you know, now Kyle's, he's worked with my coaching clients. I've worked with him personally. Again, I bought his course. It's a great resource. And he has a great YouTube channel as well, which you can go through and you can kind of look at some of his YouTube videos and you can find out kind of like, what is he doing? How has he figured this out? Because it's all about systems, Lee. You know, we focus on multifamily real estate. So we focus on apartments and we have our own systems for how we create value in apartments. Kyle has his own system for how to create value in Airbnb. So I didn't come on here to do an infomercial for Kyle Stanley, but I think
it's Kyle's lucky day. Kyle got an accidental commercial because we were talking about Airbnbs and Asheville, but that's how we roll, right? You just kind of pick up good knowledge and you keep dropping
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, I think it's a fantastic resource out there. And that's, I think Airbnb is a terrific place for anybody to start. You know, what we do in the multifamily space is kind of the other end of the spectrum.
And I'll just mention, wherever you're listening to this show, just remember that before you dive into Airbnb, check out your local municipality, whatever they're doing on the legislative and regulatory front, because one squeaky neighbor hollering at city council can shut down Airbnbs, or short-term rentals is the main name since Airbnb is a brand name. But just make sure that you're educated on that front before you dive all the way in. Now, let's talk multifamily a little bit. That's your jam. And just so you know, listeners and viewers, we'll refer to these as doors. When you start talking about multifamily, you're not talking about houses. You're talking about the number of doors, because each door will represent a separate revenue stream based on your tenant mix. So how did you get started in multifamily? And are you talking the small mom and pop fourplex? Are you talking the big corporate 300-plex? Give us a little background on that story.
Yeah. So I started with the house hack. I bought a townhouse. I bought the next one next door. And they were three bedrooms. I only had two buddies that were living with me. But I had like six units by the time I was 22 years old, Lee, and I rented five out of the six units. So I kind of had my own little multifamily back when I was in college. But what we focus on now, I call it the Holy Grail, my book. And I tell you how to get a copy. So nextlevelincome.com, if you click on the book link, if you put your address in, I'll send you a copy, or you can just download the ebook there right off the website. So you can get that. But absolutely, I talk about my 15-year journey in the book. I bought all these single family rentals and I was managing myself. And I go and I'm working in a high stress industry. Yeah, you're making a face because it was pretty painful.
You don't manage things yourself. You get a property manager. I'm, oh no.
Well, yes. And that is what I teach now. Like, don't do it. People are like, oh, well, it's easy. Chris, you say you're financially independent and this and that. Well, I started 20 years ago and I tell people, like, you can do it too in like half the time if you listen to the mistakes I made. That's what I try to tell people. That's what inspired me. So I'm managing these properties. And after, oh geez, it was over 10 years. I'm in my 30s. Both are boys. I'm on call. I've been on call for 12 years of my career. And some weeks I was working like 60, 80, even 100 hour weeks. I spent three nights straight in the hospital one night working. And I was like, all right, this is the last thing I need is to get phone calls from tenants or the manager just dealing with these issues. And I was at a meeting with my wife and I started talking to this gentleman who was friends with somebody that syndicated apartments. And a syndication is basically they bring in other investors. And he said, you should talk to my friend. I was like, well, it's kind of the same thing I'm doing. He's like, well, it's a little different. You should talk to him. So I talked to this group. They start talking about the demographic trends behind multifamily. And as I mentioned, we moved to Asheville. I got into the medical device field because of the demographic trends. So I'm like nodding, like, this guy's speaking my language. Like, there's all this rising tide, as I call it in my book, that's raising multifamily. And it's still rising. We see how fast rents are rising. You know, in some markets, over 20% a year. It's crazy. So I talked to these guys. I end up investing. Within 3 years, I'd sold all of our single family rentals and moved it all into commercial properties. It actually wasn't even 3 years. It was 2 years. This was 2013. I made the decision to invest in multifamily. By 2015, we had no more single family rentals. So very rapid. And today we have over 3,000 doors. We started to syndicate deals ourselves. And your question was, what do we focus on? From the beginning, we started to focus on 100 unit plus properties. Today, like the last property or the property we're about to close on now is 300 doors. So obviously there's pluses and minuses. Those properties are more expensive, the more units they are. So you need more capital. You need different management teams, depending on the market for more doors, but there's better efficiency. So our operating expenses in these newer, bigger properties are a much lower percentage than they were in like that first 100 unit property we bought that was built in the 80s, and other properties we bought were built in the 70s. So yeah, what we specialize in now, Lee, is if you're listening, you're like, I don't want to manage my own Airbnb. We specialize in giving investors that either don't want to or don't have time, whether it's because they have their own real estate or their own careers, like I did, to invest alongside of us in these properties and get all the benefits of real estate, the cash flow, the appreciation, and the depreciation that you get by owning it yourself.
Well, and it's economies of scale, right? So when you're able to do a larger project, you're going to have some deadbeat tenants that require a lot of attention, but you have even more really great, solid people. So when you're considering syndications, and I've had several guests on to talk about them, and one of the questions I get back from my listeners is, how do I know which one is reputable? Because if you look at these pro formas, anybody can hire a marketing person to make a glossy, and not everybody is super versed in all of the real estate vocabulary. They may just be looking at this as a way to diversify their holdings, especially right now with the stock market being so high. There are a lot of people saying, maybe I ought to pull some of my gains off and invest them in real estate. So could you give us some good questions to ask of people that are looking at a syndication, especially if it's the first time they've thought about putting some money in that space?
That is the best question to ask, really, Lee. Like that's like the perfect question. So first off, like, why invest in multifamily? So if you're an investor and you have a stock portfolio, a bond portfolio, I talk about this in my book, my MBA is in portfolio management. There's something in finance called the Sharpe ratio, which is just a risk-adjusted return. And this is why I call multifamily the holy grail. It's got all these benefits, but also it has a better risk-adjusted return than almost any other type of real estate investment. And that's why family offices, endowments, pension funds, life insurance companies, they put 20 to 30% of their funds into income-producing real estate for these reasons. So that's the first thing. Like, why should you invest in income-producing commercial real estate? That's my answer for that. The second is, like, how do you vet an operator? So my algorithm for an investor is, first off, decide what sector you want to be in. So if you say, hey, multifamily makes sense for me, or self-storage, like we also do self-storage. We have 5 self-storage facilities, actually 6 now. So we also do self-storage. You say, hey, I like self-storage. I like multifamily. I like commercial office, whatever it is you like, based upon the fundamentals behind it. And that's what my book talks about. Then it's time to say, all right, what geographies? And you can maybe start talking to operators at this time, but we like the Southeast. So if you start talking to operators, you can say, hey, Chris, why do you guys invest in the markets you do? And they should have a very cohesive answer. Well, the Carolinas, Florida, Texas, Georgia, these are all growing faster than the national average. Rents are up 10, 15, 20% a year, year over year rents. There's higher population growth, higher job growth. There's a diversity of employers. These are all things that we look for in the markets that we're in. So you get through that process. And the thing is, everybody likes to go, like you said, to the pro forma. They open up the page, they look at the numbers. And to your point, this is the absolute last thing that you can do. I have a friend that's, we're in a mastermind together, and he says, hey, Chris, I want you to look at this deal. He sends me the deal. The first thing I did, I looked at the town it was in. It's this little college town, less than 20,000 people. I said, hey, why do you want to invest in this town? And he said, I don't have a reason to invest in that town, but I want to get your opinion on the numbers on this deal. And I'm like, this is like, you got to go through this whole process before you get there, because you're exactly right. Like, I can take this spreadsheet and I can open it on my computer and I can move the numbers around and basically make them say whatever I want. So if you don't understand how to read a pro forma in a spreadsheet, you need to ask an operator, you know, all those questions. Why are you in this space? Why are you in this geography? What's your track record? Hopefully you know somebody that knows that operator, that's gotten an experience with them. If not, ask the operator, say, do you have a couple of references of somebody you could refer me to? And you can do that. Also, I'm not the be all end all of these deals, Lee. You know, if you call me and say, hey, I want to invest in other operators' deals, great. Hopefully you go through the same process with those operators. That's actually a smart thing, to have different operators, because then you can see how they respond to the same questions. But then if you don't understand the pro forma, have the operator walk you through it. Say, hey, here's where rents are today. Here's why we think they're going to be where they are in the future. These are the assumptions, right? So if you're in a market where rents are increasing 20% year over year, and the operator says, well, we think we can get 15% year over year. It's like, okay, maybe that's reasonable. If an operator says, we think we can get 15%, but rents are increasing 3% in that market, that's not the same thing. You have to be careful about how they make those assumptions. So make sure you understand the assumptions that the operator's making. What is their strategy? So when we go into a property, we buy some of these properties are brand new properties we're buying from the builders, and people say, you can't provide any value into a new property. Well, we do. We have strategies to add value to these properties, like technology packages, internet access. We do private yards for dogs and different things that cater towards residents that are paying a higher amount of rent. So these are things where you can increase the rent in a property where most people would say, well, there's really no way to make improvements in that property. That's not always true. Just like if you buy a new house, you can come in, you can make that house your own, and you can do things that really make it a little bit more comfortable for you. We come in, we make it more in line with our current properties and how we know that. And then the final thing you do is you say, hey, what's your track record? Have you had any exits? Why did you exit these properties? What were the returns? What were your assumptions? You can also ask for, like, we keep an updated record every quarter of our distributions versus what we said we were going to distribute. By the way, it's okay for operators to have good deals and bad deals. I think it's actually not a bad thing to have bad deals, because then you can ask that operator, hey, what went wrong? Hopefully right. They have a good reason. Yeah. Like if you say, hey, what happened last year? It looks like incomes were down. Well, COVID happened. And how did we manage COVID compared to other operators? So you have a little bit of perspective on that. So I know I went through a lot there. I'm happy to kind of backtrack a little bit and go over anything. But again, operator is way before the numbers. You want to make sure you vet that operator before you just start looking and say, wow, this guy's going to give me a bigger return. That's the last thing you should look at.
Okay. So I told y'all that I would do a review of Follow Up Boss, you know, because I'm your friend in real estate. And I did. Now, you know, there's a Blue Million CRM out there. I mean, if you go to any Facebook group, every realtor's like, which one should I use? Which one should I use? And you know that these CRM, which are client relationship managers or customer relationship manager, whatever you want to call it, it's truly a system that's just designed to help you know what to do next, because you're very busy and you're a multitasker in real estate. And with all those different tasks and balls up in the air, you need something to help you stay on track. And that's what Follow Up Boss does. Now, when you save a name and a phone number in there, that is basically a Rolodex. Follow Up Boss is going to take the names and phone numbers and also help you know what to do next, so you can maintain these relationships with your neighbors, because that's what this is about. Real estate is not about serving just prospects and clients. It's about taking great care of your neighbors' needs in real estate. And if you'll use a tool like Follow Up Boss, where they remember you, oh, they might even call you when they're ready to buy or sell again, or when their mom and daddy do, or their best friend or their kid, and you want to be top of mind. That's what a product like Follow Up Boss will do for you. Truly, it's going to change your business when you start paying better attention to people. They don't have to know you use Follow Up Boss, but they'll totally understand that they are being heard by you. So now there's a free trial for my people because you're loved. Go to followupboss.com/crazy. No credit card is required. And frankly, because you're my people and we made an ask for you, Follow Up Boss said, yes, you get double the free trial. That's actually enough time to log in, put some pieces in it, and watch it change your business as it has for so many realtors and teams nationwide. Again, go to followupboss.com/crazy to start your free trial today. Well, I'll just point out a couple of really great points you mentioned, Chris, that some of our listeners forget about. So if you call that operator and ask for references, call them. You guys are asking for references, and then you figure that they must have given you good ones because they handed it to you, but you're not making the phone calls. You got to do the follow-up and ask that reference. What went well? What went sideways? Were your expectations met? Because when you're talking about expectations, that goes to what you're describing as far as expectations of future rents. I personally want to have an operator that's going to give me a worst case scenario and a best case scenario, because real estate markets fluctuate. And COVID actually gave us probably a worst case scenario based on tenants who said, oh, I ain't got to pay. Fine. Because that blanket moratorium was easily one of the worst policy decisions made during COVID, not because people didn't want to help out those that were impacted, but nothing should ever be blanket. It should have been hardship related. So I think that that last point you made there is going to wind up being a great question for a long time. If somebody was operating during COVID, How did they respond to that? What was their reaction as a property manager? How many of their tenants chose to go down that hardship path and not pay? How many kept in communication and pulled a plan together? How many had to get evicted at the end of the moratorium era? Are all great ways to figure out what kind of a property management outlook and attitude they have, because somebody that had conversations with their tenants, spoiler alert, they didn't experience much leakage on rents. The ones who experienced the biggest leakage weren't talking to their tenants at all. So they're all really good insights to have. And frankly, you can tell if somebody's lying when you ask more questions, because the front's going to fall down at some point. Now, with that being said, what would you say are the leading indicators for markets that you want to get in? Because we know that in real estate, it's easy to get into Austin because everybody knows that Austin, Texas is a hot market, but the people who got in there a decade ago are the ones that are really excited. One of the markets that I'm excited about here in North Carolina is Hickory, which has flown under the radar for a long time, but is a huge opportunity space right now. I'm curious as to how you spot these improving markets, the ones that are the next
up and coming,
opportunity. And you look at a town, what would you say are the indicators besides obviously job announcements? You can go to your Chamber of Commerce and Business Journal and spot those. But what else are you looking at as far as giving an indication of stability and opportunity?
Yeah. So let's go like from macro down to the city level. So the first thing is you say, well, where are people moving? And it's coming up in the next month or two here, the United Van Lines annual report. And I always do a blog article on it. So if you search United Van Lines, I think it's their annual report or annual study, they tell you what states people are moving from. And I have it also, if you follow me on LinkedIn, you look me up, Chris Larson, it's on my website, or I think it's linkedin.com/.
Hey, Chris, should we give them a spoiler alert that people are leaving California and New York?
If you don't know that, then you've not been listening to Lee very much.
Anything. Or,
But yeah, so look, it's crazy, right? All you do is you say, hey, where are people moving to and where are they moving from? Yeah, they're moving from, we were talking about earlier, California, New York, the Northeast, Chicago. Where are they moving? They're moving to places like Colorado, like Idaho and Oregon. They're benefiting because people are moving like real close to California. Yeah, but like Colorado's great. Texas, a lot of people are moving from California to Texas. We call Austin the cheapest city in California. The Southeast is great. You have a ton of people moving from all over the country to the Southeast. I mean, people are moving to Florida in droves. The Carolinas, North Carolina continues to be one of the top markets, North Carolina, in the country. So then you say, okay, we've kind of figured out some of these states and be comfortable with it. Like, I know investors are like, I'm not going to invest in Florida. Okay. Like, that's fine. You don't have to invest in Florida, but pick markets that you like to invest in. People from the West Coast love Texas. People from the East Coast love Florida just because their proximity and they understand it. Number two, what cities? So Lee, one of the things that we've had to do is we've actually moved from larger cities to smaller cities because large institutional money, and that's where we sell a lot of our properties to, these larger operators or institutions, they've moved into Charlotte. They've moved into Raleigh. They've moved into Atlanta and some of these bigger markets. So, you know, in the past couple of years, we've gone from some of those markets to some smaller markets like Greenville, South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina. We're about to acquire property in Fort Myers, Florida, versus like we were focused on Orlando in the past. So kind of these secondary markets. So then the question is, why those markets? And again, if you find a good operator, they should be able to tell you like why they're in these markets. So you don't have to do all this research yourself. They can just explain to you these sorts of things. But hey, you want markets that are growing faster than the national average in terms of population growth and job growth. Those two things are the absolute lifeblood of the real estate industry. And population growth and job growth equals demand. Okay. So if you have greater demand in a market, you're going to have an increase in rents and property values typically. The other thing you want to be careful about is going into a market where there's like just one major employer, because that's going to increase your risk. So once you know population and job growth meet your metrics, you know, they're significantly higher than the national averages, then do they have a diversity of employers? So you want to see 2-3 dozen like good size employers in a market. A place like Houston 10 years ago, it was way overdone, or it was way overweighted in the energy sector. So when the oil market softened, that market softened substantially. Now, Houston's done a great job. They brought in a lot of medical, you have universities, you have a lot of other industries in and around Houston that have made that market more robust in terms of employers. And it makes sense, right? Because the economy goes in cycles. And if you have employers like universities, like local and state governments, they're going to be very stable. Whereas energy industries, tourism, they can be cyclical depending on what's out there. So you want some of these overlapping employers. And then when it comes to the city and it comes to the actual like neighborhood where you're buying these properties, what we like to do is we like to look at 1, 3, and 5 mile data. So we like to make sure that there's good schools, there's low crime rates, and there's high income. So we have like this property in Fort Myers, the average income is over $100,000 within a mile of this property. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. Why is that important? Real quick, if you're looking at the average rents in an area, they should be about a third of the average income in that area. So if somebody is making $90,000 a year, they can probably afford about $2,500 a month, about $30,000 a year in rent. Like that's about the top of the market. So if you come in and say, hey, we're buying this property and average rents are $2,000 a month and average income is $50,000 a month, there's probably not a lot of room to move that rent. Now, there may be some extraneous circumstance where like the area is improving rapidly, but typically that's a good kind of first indication. And the thing I look at, Lee, I'm looking at reasons not to invest in a deal. Like I'm trying to eliminate deals. So when you look at operators and you look at deals, you want to look for red flags. You want to say, okay, the operator can't answer this question. They don't have this information, or they're sloppy for whatever reason. Or you find a market, like I mentioned, like this market is 18,000 people to my friend in the mastermind. It's like, that's pretty small. Like maybe it's an okay market, but what kind of big operator is going to want to come in and buy that property from you? It's a pretty small market to be selling. Whereas, you know, we're looking at 250,000 minimum in terms of population, and even upwards of 1 million or more is even better in some of these bigger markets.
So I know you guys are writing notes as furiously as you can. Don't worry, because all of Chris's stuff, including the book, will be in the show notes. But of course, the show is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And so we don't just stay on nerd mode here for a minute. You're going to have to tell our listeners one of the craziest things you've experienced as somebody who's operated in the real estate space, whether it's something that just surprised you all to pieces or it was shocking. What was the one moment that you said, I cannot believe this is going on, that my guests would like to hear about?
Yeah, I have a few stories, but so we live in Asheville and my stepfather's got a property in Asheville and we used to help him manage it. And he calls me one day, he's like, hey, I need some help, Chris. Like my tenant's having a hard time paying the rent. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? Well, I guess the husband, or I forget if it was a husband or just the boyfriend, was in jail. So he had run somebody over, he'd killed somebody. And so he had this criminal record, right? And he ends up getting apprehended. Well, my stepfather didn't do a background check on these people, right? So I'm like, I told myself, I'm like, how did you not pick this up? I'm like, did you do a background check? And he said, well, no, I didn't. I was like, oh my gosh. He's kind of old school, right? Yeah. And I'm like, wait a minute. And then here I got my wife going to this property, like helping out. And we have this now. Was he a violent criminal? You know, but I'm like, this is not cool. Like, and I told my stuff, I was like, I'm sorry. Like, we can't, like, if you're not doing background checks on these people, there's no way we can do that. And you might be listening and say, well, I don't do background checks. You need to, sure. You need to. And that's where I love, when we do multifamily, you know, we have in-place property management teams. They're running background checks, credit checks on everybody. If you run your own properties, run it like a business. You know, yes. Like you said, Lee, have a property management company or account for paying yourself a management fee. But look, people are people, like stuff happens. I went and read the story. The guy didn't mow this lady down on purpose, but it was manslaughter and he ended up going to jail. And that same property ended up, the dishwasher was leaking and it flooded and created just a tremendous amount of mold damage. So you know, he ended up going 6 months without rent as all the repairs were done and the turnover happened. And it just kind of illustrated why it's nice to have, you know, 300 paying residents instead of one paying. And it solidified the reason that I kind of got out of the residential space. But again, it's a wonderful area to be in. But I was flabbergasted when I found out who was renting his property.
Well, it's one of those moments when you get the clarity of better ways to do things and you either adapt and change for the future or you keep making the same mistakes over and over. And just remember, y'all, the tenants, every single time, they know the law better than you do. So they would know if they can get evicted while incarcerated or not. I found that out by accident when I owned some properties in South Carolina. You cannot evict an incarcerated tenant. You just have to let it sit there until they get out of jail.
How about that? Wow.
So like, this is information I probably should have had before I bought these townhouses. And it was just a learning lesson, right? So now I do more research, but it's also why I'm not a property manager, because that's not where my knowledge base is. And Carol Bradley is one of my property management gurus. She knows this stuff frontwards, backwards, and sideways, and she's bilingual, so she can explain everything in two languages. So there's a very specific reason you want somebody else to do all the background so that you can protect your investment. But remember, when you protect your investment too, you're also protecting the ability to provide housing for somebody else, because that's what it boils down to when you own rental properties. You're a housing provider. And I think more investors need to realize there's a big honor in that, because people have to have somewhere to go. And it just as well be you that's providing it, keeping it clean and safe and well kept.
Absolutely. Yeah, we just bought a mobile home park this year in South Carolina.
And you bought an ATM. That's what you bought. You
know, that's pretty sweet. But the thing is, it is a wonderful area that provides affordable housing. And when you see the before and after pictures of this property, it's kind of jaw-dropping. So anyway, real estate is wonderful in the fact that you can own something that can provide tremendous income and wealth building for you and your family. You can provide something of tremendous value, homes, housing for other people. And it's really a win-win if you operate ethically and look for all these opportunities. So I love the point you just made there, Lee.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you sharing this many insights on the show. So tell our folks one more time the best way to reach out to you, in addition to clicking on the show notes, because we will make your life easier. But if you're sitting there feverishly writing notes, Chris, where should they reach out?
Yeah, we try to make it easy too. Nextlevelincome.com. You can check out the Airbnb information I mentioned, /Airbnb, and get a free copy of my book. Click on the book link. If you're interested in learning more about our investments, there's an invest link there, which you can reach directly out to me and schedule a time for us to talk. And I can share more information about all that. And my personal email is chris@nextlevelincome.com.
And remember, now that he's told you all the questions to ask, if y'all reach out about what his intentions are, you better ask the right questions and see if he's paying attention.
And if I can't answer those questions, then run away. Run the other direction, please.
Well, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on the show today and dropping so much good actionable information. It's very appreciated, because I know my listeners and viewers are going to be better for it. And you have to follow up with us when you go to the Cleveland County Fair and let us know what your kids thought. And we're glad to have you in North Carolina doing good things.
Likewise, Lee. It's a pleasure to be on here. Thanks for all you're doing for your audience. This has been a ton of fun.
All right, guys, make sure you leave him some love in the comments. Tell him what you learned, what you're going to follow up on. Give me 5 stars and a subscription and a like, and make sure you tune in, because you don't know what you hear next time on Crazy Shit, and we'll see you. Okay, now, don't forget to go try Follow Up Boss so that your business can continue to expand in professionalism, and then you can meet some more crazy people yourself. I really appreciate Follow Up Boss sponsoring this episode, but mainly I appreciate them for giving y'all double the free trial time with no credit card required. So make sure you go to followupboss.com/crazy and then let me know what you think. I'll see you guys next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more Crazy Shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or you just need to one-up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram @LeeThomasBrown, or tweet me @LeeBrown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.